See, now it's coming to the end of May. It's a little late for this, but not really. So we're going to talk about garden transplanting. I'm going to give you four simple steps to how to transplant in your garden. They will help your seedlings make a smooth transition, sort of more or less, from pot to garden. Either way, starting your seedlings indoors or purchasing greenhouse-grown transplants from your local garden store can give you a real head start that will add weeks to your growing season. This practice can make or break a crop if you live where summers are short, or like us, in a climate where midsummer heat leads to a meltdown of more cool-natured plants. Growing your own seedlings indoors is easy and fun because you can try vegetable varieties rarely offered at most garden centers and start them under pest-free conditions, but take some time to harden off. We're going to talk about that. Transplants before you try setting them out in your garden. What do I mean by harden off plants? Plants adjust to small, gradual changes in their environment better than sudden shifts, which is what the hardening off process is all about. Look at it this way. Just as you get burned when you bare your untanned skin to the sun all of a sudden in the spring or summer, leaves of plants start indoors will develop a pale sunburn patches if they are suddenly exposed just to too much light, too much sun. The story has a happier ending when you introduce seedlings to bright light and sheltered breezes gradually over a period of 1 or 2 weeks, folks, maybe 3 weeks for certain plants. In response to more abundant light, the leaves and stems bulk up on chloroplast, chlorophyll. The mighty green organelles that transform light and carbon dioxide into energy for your plants. Much of that energy is sent to the main stem, which suddenly needs to get tough enough to twist and bend without breaking when blasted by wind and other natural forces. You may not see much new growth while plants are beginning to harden off, but don't worry. They're busy growing and rearranging exactly the kinds of cells they will need to prosper once they are set, let's say it called, set free in your garden. This sort of period of adjustment can take place on your deck or on a patio or under some trees within a protected enclosure in the garden. A little bit of all or a little bit of both. For example, you might begin by setting your seedlings outside in a shelter spot a couple hours one day, then 4 hours the next, gradually increasing light and air movement until the little babies, whatever you want to call them, the babes, have made it through several days to a week or two of nights in their new outdoor world. If you happen to have to go away all day, like some of us do that work, put the plants in a location where they'll receive early morning sunlight and be shaded as the sun's position changes later in the morning and the afternoon. Watch your seedlings closely for signs of drying out and be ready to shift them to larger containers if you see roots, for instance, coming out of the drain holes at the bottom, trying to get a bigger pot. If frost is predicted, you might want to take your plants inside. This late in the year, that's, at least in this part of the country, not going to be a problem. While your seedlings are hardening off, prepare the plant space by amending the soil with compost and mixing in an appropriate amount of whatever, I emphasize, organic fertilizer you prefer. Both additions energize the soil's food web so that seedlings slipped into planting holes will be met by a welcoming a whole group, a committee, let's call it, of truly root-friendly fungi, bacteria, and water-soluble nutrients. Like all living things, some plants form stronger alliances with soil more microorganisms than others. But soil scientists think that all plants, basically all, take up nutrients and resist diseases better when they have a strong relationship with the life forms that flourish in what we'll call their rhizosphere, the living area, the rhizosphere where they are. The fertile real estate where roots and soils all come together. Mix at least a handful of compost in with the plant as you put it in, somewhat to the bottom if it's really completed compost, especially used for vegetable seedlings, because they need this partnership if they want to fall into place rather quickly. Depending on the plant, when the plants have hardened off for at least a week and the soil is ready to receive them, check your weather forecast. Soil temps should be to the plant's liking, and it's helpful to have some cloud cover, or maybe light rain during the first few days after transplanting. Boy, if you can set that up, that's really being lucky. If you have to, delay transplanting if a real heat wave's on the way, or if the soil is really clammy and cold, the other extreme. Not going to happen here. Meanwhile, just make sure your little guys, your plants are well hydrated and amply fed going into the transplanting operation. Drench them with a weak solution of nice organic fertilizer, which I can guide you to, the day before transplanting, and again, just before you remove them from their pots to go into their new home. In Mother Nature, nature occasionally transplants a broken stem to a moist spot where it can take root, but never in nature does she lift it, handle it, and replant it 6 weeks old. So think about that. To make this bizarre adventure more acceptable to plants, push them out of the container from the bottom rather than pulling them out. In most cases, you can place one hand over the container and literally shake them between your fingers. Tip it over and shake or tap it to loosen the root ball. If you got to, if it's necessary, pry roots loose with a small use of a knife. Handle the freed plant by its root ball. A large spoon, if these little small plants, is great for this. And avoid touching the main stem. As you set the plant in its permanent home, use the lowest leaves as handles. Should they break off, it's not a big deal. And in some plants, like tomatoes, you might want to even break them off and plant that plant a little deeper. As a general rule, it's best to keep as much soil packed around that root ball as possible. Don't shake it loose. We used to be taught that. That's wrong. Some exceptions are a seedling whose roots have grown literally into a solid mass. To encourage these kind of overdone, frustrated roots to grow outward into surrounding soil, you can use a fork or a little toothpick, or even your fingers to kind of loosen them and break them away from the ball. Finish the transplanting process by drenching the soil with water, a super important step that eliminates air pockets around the roots. And that really helps beneficial soil-borne microorganisms to move into the plant's rhizosphere, let's call it the living area, much more efficiently. If you're really lucky, nicely hardened off seedlings, transplanted in perfect weather, blah, mild, cloudy, and kind of not too windy, kind of still, can fend for themselves, but great transplanting weather seldom lasts long enough. To be safe, temporarily shield plants from sun and wind by covering them with at least a couple of days after transplanting. Increase to 4 or 5 days if the weather is really very sunny, very windy, or happens to be abnormally cold, or if the plant's roots were damaged as you set them out and you couldn't help it. For example, if you found 3 plants rather than one in a purchased pot of basil, which I love, and you separate them as you take them out, covering the plants for a few days or more after transplanting will make the difference between success and failure. And give this idea a thought. You can use upturned flower pots, cardboard boxes, or even buckets to cover plants. In hot weather, opt for a piece of lightweight cloth. If you can, hold it aloft. Don't let it touch the plant, but rather be above it. Remove the covers after a few days and then kind of, thank yourself for a job well done, because it will protect your plants. After all, one of the huge differences between people and plants is that we can move around. Your plant can't move, folks. It's where we put it. While a plant's idea of a great life is to stay in one place, that's what it needs to do. For plants, good transplanting practices soften the transition from life confined in a tiny pot to life in a big garden by their standards. For people, they open the door to earlier harvest and a more successful and a more fruitful garden. And if you want a secret I've used forever, go look and find some kelp-based fertilizers to help plants transplants get off to a fast start. Most of these products have a thing. I'm only going to do this one. It's called Astaphylum nodosum. That's a brown, ribbon-like seaweed, often seen attached with a big bladder if you're out in the ocean. And they grow in cold ocean water, but you can buy them. Kelp contains growth hormones that encourage root. It's really a root stimulant, as well as 60 or more micro. If I had to give you one thing, well, maybe two, it would be kelp fertilizers and fish hydrolysates or fish emulsions. In addition to applying this kelp, the seaweed, with water to the roots of the transplants, just as they're set out, it's best. I would say drenching the plant leaves with seaweed, or a combination, here we go, my favorite, of seaweed and fish emulsion sprays. Every 2 or 3 weeks, at least early in the growing season, results in healthier, more vigorous plants. Some products are not organic due to how they are manufactured, but the Organic Materials Review Institute, called OMRI, look up OMRI, O-M-R-I, for whatever you're buying. Make sure it's on the package. List more than 30 kelp-based products approved just for those of us that prefer to grow everything organically. Since I did the very first part of this show this week on bees, we'll talk just a real minute. I've only got a couple minutes left here on pollinators. But let me include what pollinators are. Bats, butterflies, beetles, number of different kinds of flies we don't even appreciate, hummingbirds, moths, and a good number of wasps, which everybody seems to be surprised about. Next week, I promise, we'll go into this in detail, but I've only got a minute or two here just to kind of get you interested. First, you got to create housing, whether it's bat houses. They also make bee houses. You can make a place for mason bees to put their own eggs in. There's a number of things you can use around your house. No one will even notice they're there but you. The other one that most people don't do is provide a water source. I don't care if it's a small bird bath or a number of smaller plant trays. Especially where I live here in Central Texas, last few weeks hadn't been a problem. But in general, if you don't have water, you're not going to have pollinators. And look at the plant you're going to plant. Even in your garden, you can plant vegetables that also have blooms, or you can plant separate flowering plants that actually tie into and, in many cases, increase what you're going to get out of your vegetable garden if you choose them wisely. And we'll get into that next week. It's really a good idea to do. A few things I do use, just so you'll know, is Bird of Paradise I've got, and a number of different mints, hyacinths, rosemary, sunflowers, things you can use for thyme, all are good for your pollinators. And the number one, I got about 1 minute left here. Folks, stop using pesticides. Studies show that a decline of over 60% in pollinators comes where people use regular pesticides. And most gardeners don't even think about it. They got a weed, they go get Roundup. They got a bug problem, they go and get some poison. You're poisoning the good guys along with the bad, and in many cases, to the detriment of you. And this one you'll like because I love it. Don't be quite so neat in your garden. Leave some leaves laying around. Leave some debris if you want it, because a number of these animals either hide in it during the day. Some of them put their eggs in it. Some of them even survive on the microorganisms that live in this little leaf litter and things that are ordinarily in your garden area. So we'll extend this next week, but just think about it. What we call neat isn't neat for animals. It needs to, I think you should consider having your garden and your living area look kind of like you live on the edge of a nice woods. Just think about that. Thanks for staying tuned to Organic Matters.